Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine for a moment that the neural wiring of your eye is like a perfectly planted apple orchard.
Right, where every single tree is spaced out with, you know, absolute mathematical precision.
Exactly. That spacing is what allows the root systems to spread out underground without competing, and the branches to catch the sunlight without overlapping and like casting shadows on each other.
Yeah, but think about what happens if the biological rule that forces those trees to stay perfectly spaced apart just suddenly vanishes.
Right. What if instead of an orderly orchard, the seeds just drop wherever and the trees all tangle into this chaotic overlapping clump?
Well, the entire system collapses. The roots strangle each other, no sunlight penetrates the canopy, and you just don't get any apples.
Right. And you, the listener, might be wondering why we are talking about orchards on a genomics deep dive today.
It's a fair question.
But today we are going to explore a rare genetic glitch that causes exactly this loss of personal space between neurons. It leads to a newly mapped, incredibly rare neurodevelopmental syndrome.
Yeah, and understanding the mechanics of this glitch is, I mean, it's fundamentally changing how we view the microscopic architecture of the nervous system.
Which is huge. Today, we celebrate the work of a vast international research team led by scientists and clinicians at Haukeland University Hospital in Norway and King Faisal Specialist Hospital in Saudi Arabia, who have advanced our understanding of the genetics behind brain and eye development.
Yeah, and the focal point of their work is a gene called DSCAM, which stands for Down Syndrome Cell Adhesion Molecule. It's located on chromosome 21.
Specifically in a region historically known as the Down syndrome critical region, right?
Right. But despite that name, its actual role in Down syndrome pathogenesis is still pretty murky. What is completely undeniable, however, is the biological function the DSCAM gene encodes. It produces a neuronal adhesion molecule.
Okay, let's unpack this. When someone says a neuronal adhesion molecule, the word adhesion makes it sound like glue, you know? It sounds like its job is to stick things together.
That's what you think, yeah.
But it's actually doing something much more sophisticated. It's functioning almost like a personal space enforcer at a crowded party.
I love that analogy. It's highly accurate.
Because it's regulating horizontal and vertical patterning in the developing nervous system, right?
Exactly. During fetal development, billions of neurons are migrating and trying to figure out where to park themselves. The DSCAM protein sits on the surface of these cells.
So it's basically giving directions.
Right. Its job is essentially to organize the retina and the rest of the nervous system into neat, functioning layers and columns. It tells similar types of neurons, hey, we are the same kind of cells, so we need to repel each other just enough so we don't clump together.
And this molecular repulsion is a process known as self-neuronal avoidance?
Yes. It guarantees that the microscopic wiring forms a perfectly spaced mosaic, just like your orchard.
Right, but without that personal space enforcer, the neurons simply do not know how to distance themselves from one another. So the core clinical problem we are diving into today is what happens to a human being who inherits two broken copies of this DSCAM gene.
Which is known in genetics as a biallelic loss of function.
Yeah.
You receive one non-working copy of the gene from your mother and one non-working copy from your father.
And we really need to emphasize the sheer statistical improbability of this happening.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. The allele frequency, meaning how often a broken copy of this specific gene appears in the general global population, is exceptionally low.
Like, how low are we talking?
Current genomic databases suggest we are looking at an occurrence of maybe 1 to 2 per 10,000 people.
Wow. Meaning the mathematical chance of two individuals who both happen to carry this exact rare broken gene meeting, having a child together, and both passing on the broken copy is infinitesimally small in the general outbred population.
It's incredibly rare. Historically, before this comprehensive study, there were only 2 single cases ever reported in all of medical literature.
Only 2?
Yeah, just 2. One was back in 2017 during a large-scale sequencing study in Saudi Arabia, and another surfaced in 2021.
And that second one was a child who had a much larger chromosomal deletion that just happened to sweep up the DSCAM gene along with some others, right?
Right. So researchers were essentially looking at a blank map, To prove that this gene failure causes a universal biological syndrome and wasn't just a random fluke in those two historical patients, they needed a pattern.
They needed more individuals with this specific genetic signature, and they actually managed to gather clinical data from 6 individuals in total for this study.
Yeah, 4 were completely new patients.
Mm-hmm.
And they also retrieved extended updated clinical data on the original patient from that 2017 study, as well as his younger brother who turned out to be similarly affected.
So to pinpoint the exact genetic cause in these individuals, they used a technique called trio exome sequencing.
Exactly, because the genome is massive.
Right.
Billions of letters of DNA. But the exome is just the 1-2% of the genome that actually contains the instruction manuals for building proteins.
And trio sequencing means they're looking at the parents too.
Yes. Trio sequencing involves taking DNA from the affected child and both of their parents.
So by sequencing the protein coding regions and subtracting the parents' normal genetic variations from the child's data, geneticists can basically filter out the background noise.
Precisely. They isolate the exact mutations causing the disease. And when they looked at those genetic instruction manuals for the DSCAM gene, they found different types of spelling errors.
Right. The paper mentions nonsense mutations, frame shifts, and copy number variants. For you, the listener, a copy number variant is like someone ripping an entire chapter out of the manual.
Good way to put it.
And a frame shift is like someone deleting a single letter, which shifts all the remaining letters over one space, turning the rest of the sentence into complete gibberish.
Yeah, and a nonsense mutation inserts a period right in the middle of a sentence, telling the cell to stop reading prematurely.
But even though the spelling was broken in entirely different ways across these families, the ultimate result was identical, wasn't it?
It was. In every case, the body could not produce a working DSCAM protein.
But identifying the genetic mutation is only the first step. The clinicians then face the really arduous task of characterizing the physical and developmental effects.
What we call the clinical phenotype. Yeah. And that presented a massive logistical challenge, particularly when it came to evaluating the patient's vision.
Because, I mean, how do you measure intricate eye function in children who have severe neurodevelopmental delays? You obviously can't just ask them to sit in a chair, cover one eye, and read the bottom line of an eye chart.
No, of course not. And furthermore, these children presented with a condition called nystagmus.
Which means their eyes are making these involuntary rapid movements.
Exactly. They are constantly darting side to side or rotating. Any standard clinical eye exam requires a relatively still patient.
Like when they use an ophthalmoscope to look at the back of your eye.
Right. You need a steady target to capture a clear picture of the retina. And testing the electrical activity of the eye is even harder.
Because don't traditional methods for electrical testing usually require placing physical electrodes directly onto the cornea?
They do, directly onto the sensitive surface of the eye. Doing that to a child with developmental delays and rapidly moving eyes is, well, it's highly invasive and distressing.
So the researchers had to adapt, and they used a handheld electroretinography system, or ERG, called the Retevil device.
Yeah, the Retevil is amazing. The beauty of this technology is that it relies on skin electrodes placed just below the eye on the cheek rather than on the cornea itself.
It's a lot like a mechanic trying to diagnose a subtle knocking sound in a car's engine. Instead of pulling the entire engine block apart, the mechanic uses a highly sensitive acoustic stethoscope on the outside of the hood while the engine is running.
That's exactly it. The Retevil flashes different intensities of light into the moving eye and catches the electrical signals bouncing off the retina from the outside.
And to see the physical structure of the retinas in the most severely affected individuals, they actually utilized a specialized retcam while the patients were under general anesthesia, safely capturing high-resolution images.
Right. And with that innovative data collection, a really stark and unified clinical picture emerged across all 6 individuals.
What were the common threads?
Well, all of them exhibited moderate to severe neurodevelopmental delay with deeply impaired language development. Some were completely nonverbal, while others were limited to communicating in just 2 or 3 word sentences.
There were also profound motor issues too, right?
Yeah, hypotonia, or chronically low muscle tone, was widespread. They walked with gait abnormalities, usually maintaining an overly upright posture with a broad-based, unsteady stance just to keep their balance.
And there was a high risk of focal seizures starting in infancy. The clinicians also noted mild short stature and mildly dysmorphic craniofacial features. Things like a prominent glabella, which is the bone area between the eyebrows, a narrow nasal root, and a square chin. Wait, I have to stop and ask about that. I understand why a brain wiring issue causes seizures or walking delays, But why does a gene responsible for spacing out neurons change the physical shape of a child's chin or the bridge of their nose?
It seems disconnected, I know, but in embryology, everything is intertwined.
How so?
During fetal development, the tissues that fold to become the neural tube, which eventually forms the brain and spinal cord, also generate populations of cells called neural crest cells.
Okay, and what do those do?
These cells migrate outward to help form the bones and cartilage of the face. Genes like DSCAM are often multitasking during these crucial early weeks.
So if the architectural instructions are missing for the brain, the subtle scaffolding of the face, which is developing concurrently, often shifts slightly as well.
Exactly.
Well, here's where it gets really interesting. We have these broad neurodevelopmental and physical symptoms, but the absolute defining signature of this syndrome is isolated in the eyes.
Yes, every single patient had that nystagmus.
And they suckered from extreme light sensitivity, known as photophobia, and overall, very poor visual acuity. They were often holding objects just inches from their faces to decipher them.
Yet, despite struggling immensely in normal daylight, they somehow maintained their night vision.
Which is wild.
It is. The preservation of night vision alongside the failure of daylight vision was a critical clue decoded by the ERG testing.
Because the human retina relies on two primary types of photoreceptor cells, rods and cones.
Right. Rods are the scotopic pathway. They are incredibly sensitive to tiny amounts of light, making them responsible for your night vision. But they're completely incapable of processing color or sharp, high-resolution detail.
While cones make up the photopic pathway, they demand bright light to function and are entirely responsible for your ability to read fine print and see vibrant colors.
Exactly. So when the researchers used that Redivol device, they ran tests in the dark and then separate tests using bright flashing lights.
And what did they see?
Testing the dark-adapted rod pathways with dim flashes yielded electrical signals largely within the normal range. The rods were doing their job.
But the cones.
Switching to light-adapted tests to measure the cone pathways produced a drastically different graph. The electrical wave we look for, specifically the B wave, was severely delayed and attenuated. It barely registered a fraction of its normal amplitude.
The cone pathway was dropping the signal. But the precision of the ERG test proved it wasn't the cone cells themselves that were dead or missing, right?
Correct. It pointed to a failure at a very specific cellular layer deeper in the eye.
Let's break that down. A retina is structured like a relay race.
Yes, you have the photoreceptors, the rods and cones at the very back, acting as the first runners. They capture the light and pass the electrical baton to an intermediate layer of cells called bipolar cells.
Okay, and then?
These bipolar cells then run the next leg, passing the signal to the ganglion cells, which bundle together to form the optic nerve leading to the brain.
So the specific delay and muted shape of that B wave on the ERG monitor indicated that the baton was being dropped exactly at the level of the cone-associated bipolar cells in the central retina.
Yes, the intermediary relay station was failing.
Before we explore the mechanism behind that failure, we have to look at a massive diagnostic puzzle the clinicians faced in this study. We mentioned earlier how rare this mutation is.
Exceptionally rare, yes.
But several of the individuals in this cohort were born to parents who were first cousins. In populations where consanguinity marriages between close relatives is common, the statistical chance of two parents carrying the exact same rare recessive genetic mutation goes up significantly.
That's right.
But here is where the math gets wild. If a child inherits one incredibly rare recessive disease from their parents due to shared ancestry, there's a statistical probability they might inherit a second, completely unrelated rare disease at the exact same time.
And that's exactly what happened here. The researchers found a pair of 14-year-old twins in this group who inherited the broken DSCAM genes. But one twin also inherited the genetic markers for familial Mediterranean fever.
And the other twin inherited a pathogenic mutation causing H syndrome, a severe histiocytosis disorder that resulted in a spinal tumor and type 1 diabetes.
Yeah, clinical genetics at that level becomes an extreme sorting exercise. The clinicians had to meticulously untangle overlapping conditions in real time.
It must have been incredibly difficult.
It was. They had to evaluate the twins, compare them to the unrelated children in the cohort, and carefully isolate which symptoms belonged to the H syndrome and which were the true universal symptoms of the DSCAM loss of function.
So confirming that the neurodevelopmental delays and the retinal cone pathway failures were solely due to the DSCAM variants required immense diagnostic rigor and cross-referencing.
Absolutely.
Oh, wait, I want to push back here for a second just to ensure the logic holds up. We are talking about complex human children experiencing developmental delays, gait issues, and seizures. How exactly do we know for sure that this specific cone cell electrical failure in their retinas is caused by the exact same personal space issue we discussed at the beginning?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to examine the animal models. Geneticists have spent years engineering DSCAM knockout mice and chickens, animals bred specifically to completely lack this gene.
Okay, and what happens in those animals?
Well, when we examine the retinas of those chickens, the inner plexiform layer, the exact anatomical zone where those bipolar cells connect, fails to organize properly.
And in the mice?
In the knockout mice, we see the visual consequence of removing that personal space enforcer. The neurons exhibit no self-avoidance. Instead of spreading out into a neat functional mosaic, the cells clump together into tight, disorganized bundles.
Which is bad.
Very bad. Normally, during brain development, if neurons wire together improperly or clump up, the body recognizes the error and initiates a process called apoptosis, programmed cell death.
The body essentially prunes away the bad wiring to save the broader network.
Exactly. However, in these DTaP knockout mice, the clumping physically alters the cellular environment in a way that prevents the apoptosis signal from getting through.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the clustered retinal ganglion cells survive when they're supposed to die, creating a permanently disorganized, dysfunctional layer that simply cannot transmit a clear signal.
So the human ERG data, that specific electrical drop-off at the cone bipolar cellular level, is the functional consequence of those specific neurons clumping together and disrupting the relay.
You've got it. The microscopic structural chaos observed in a mouse retina directly explains the delayed electrical wave captured by skin electrodes on a child's cheek.
That bridges the gap perfectly.
Right.
So having mapped the genetics, the physical symptoms, and the cellular mechanism, what are the actual implications for clinical practice moving forward?
Well, this deep dive definitively establishes a new, rare syndromic form of recessive intellectual disability. For the affected families, finally having a name, a mechanism, and a precise cause for their children's condition provides immense psychological closure.
Ending what is often a grueling diagnostic odyssey, yeah.
Right, and for the wider medical community, it arms geneticists and pediatricians with a clear electroclinical blueprint.
So if a clinician evaluates an infant with...
Completely. They display no neurodevelopmental issues and have completely normal vision. The working copy provides enough protein to get the job done.
Okay, so what's the issue?
However, the study notes that separate, independent research has linked single, spontaneous de novo mutations in the DSCAM gene to autism spectrum disorder.
Wait, really?
Yes. In those studies, researchers used a technique called induced pluripotent stem cells. They took regular skin cells from an individual with ASD and a spontaneous DSCAM mutation, biologically turned back the clock to revert them into stem cells, and then grew miniature neurons in a petri dish.
And what happened to those lab-grown neurons?
They showed down-regulated, or basically reduced, numbers of receptors in their synapses.
Wow. So inheriting a single broken copy from a parent appears harmless, but a single spontaneous mutation in the same gene occurring in a newly formed embryo might subtly alter brain wiring enough to contribute to autism.
It suggests the human nervous system is incredibly sensitive to exactly how and exactly when, during development, this gene's function is reduced.
It highlights a critical limitation in our current knowledge, doesn't it?
It does. It points to the next frontier. We need much deeper clinical characterizations of monoallelic or single-copy DSCAM mutations.
Yeah.
We need to pinpoint the exact threshold of how much DSCAM protein is required to build a healthy brain.
Because if you are listening to this right now while walking the dog, driving, or just looking around your room, your ability to see the vibrant details of your environment, process that information, and coordinate your muscles to move relies entirely on the fact that right now, inside your nervous system, the DSCAM protein is keeping billions of microscopic wires perfectly spaced.
Exactly.
This rare syndrome shows us the profound consequences when that silent guardian fails. So what does this all mean?
It means that biallelic loss of the DSCAM gene causes a distinct identifiable neurodevelopmental syndrome marked by intellectual disability, early onset seizures, and a very specific structural failure of the eye's cone pathway. By mapping this rare condition, researchers have proven that DSCAM acts as an essential non-negotiable architect for spacing out neurons, ensuring the microscopic wiring of the human retina and brain functions properly.
What does this mean for our understanding of how a single genetic instruction can dictate the microscopic architecture of human perception?
It's a lot to think about.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base. We're learning the light.
See the world in the trembling frame, a spinning seal in the shifting name. Signals flicker where they should align, like broken street lights in the neon line. Two quiet hits in the same old code, a missing bridge on the nervous road. In the cone lit path starts dropping out, but we trace the fall, we map the dial. Say it plain, the wiring's wrong, but we found the place in the snap of the genome, in the pulse of the trace. Right, still steady while the bright steps start. We name the pattern, we answer the call. Oh, hold on tight. What? We're learning the light. We're learning the light. We're learning the light. Long night skin electrodes, steady hands, waveforms rising like distant bands. Bipolar sparks that should carry the day. Lose their rhythm, fade to gray. Not just the stare that can't stay still. Not just the silence in words you will. Seizures like storms in the narrow sky, but the thread that ties the Y to the I. Say it, say it, say it, say it plain. The wiring's wrong, but we found the place. In the snap of the genome, in the pulse of the trace. A small cohort, but the sign stands tall. Test the vision, let the cones cargo.